whole thing. Cook Hay, Ahmed Allah, about the middle of the Ahmed line begins to go. Okay, we mentioned in the Mishnah the pasuk tells us that in the case of the power of the third of Yom Kippur, which has to be taken outside of Yerushalayim and burnt, the people who carry it are the people who are involved with taking it out to be burnt. According to the Chachamim, that means the people who are carrying it. According to the Shimon, according to everybody, the people who are carrying it. According to the Chachamim, as soon as they leave the Azara, carrying it, according to the Shimon, once most of it catches on fire, then they all become Tame and their clothes become Tame. No, according to the Shimon, they wouldn't be burning it until after. Everybody agrees they're not burning it until they get to the place outside Yerushalayim. But the Chachamim will hold that the people who are carrying it become Tame as soon as they leave the Azara. The various details that we mentioned yesterday. And Reb Shimon says they'll still be Tahor at that point while they're carrying it outside Yerushalayim until they get to the place where it has to be burnt. And then when most of it catches on fire, that's when all the people who were involved in carrying it and burning it are going to become Tahor. We'll see in the Gemara. We'll see later on. We'll see it towards the end of the parashah. The point is, anyway, so because of that, that leads us into a discussion. So now that's true not only of the power and the third of Yom Kippur, it's also true of the other parim and seirim and nisrafim. All of those we learned earlier in the Masechta, we learned by various shavas and other things that the same rules apply to all of them. They all have to be burnt outside Yerushalayim, and the same rule about Tumas Begadim applies to all of them. In addition, you have two other places where the Torah tells us that people who are involved with certain, they're not real korbanos, we might call them quasi-korbanos, become tamei. One of them is people who are involved with burning with preparing and burning the paradrama from when it's shested. And another one is the person who takes the sar amishtaleach, the sar al-azazel, out to Azazel and then throws it off the cliff over there. By both of them, the Torah spells out that they become tamei and their clothes become tamei.
No.
It's a very common misconception that people have, because we always learn as kids that the paradrama is the tahir, people who are tamei, and the tamei people who are tahir. So people have the mistaken impression that the kohen who sprinkles the paradrama water on a person becomes tamei. That's wrong. If the kohen who sprinkles the paradrama water on a person does not become tamei. But all the people who are involved in preparing the paradrama become tamei from the shchita and on. The kohen who shechts it and sprinkles the blood, and the people who are involved in burning it and gathering the ashes, I don't remember if they become tamei. Anyway, whatever. And also, in addition, if a person touches paradrama water, not for the purpose of sprinkling, they touch it just without any purpose, then they become tamei. No, but they're right. So it's in that sense that people, because that's what the Torah says. So in that sense, we can say that the paradrama is the tahor people who are tamei and the tamei people who are tahor, but not the person who actually does the sprinkling itself, right? Okay. So you have seven cases where a person involved with a certain korban or quasi-korban becomes tamei. You have the five korim and seirim and nisrafim, you have the paradrama, and you have the third amishtalaya. So now we're going to talk about, a little more about the details of the truma involved with them. Tanarabana, we learn in a braita. Parim upara the third amishtalaya, the parim, meaning of Yom Kippur and the other cases, as well as the par, as well as the para, meaning the paradrama, and the third amishtalaya, the third lazazel. All of them, Hamshaleach, Atzoth, and Ramakiran, with each one of them, respectively, the one who sends it off, with the one who takes it, who takes it away, which is the Tzor Lazazel, Atzothan, the one who burns them, which applies to the five Korbanos plus the Paradrama, the Hamakiran, and the one who carries them out, which applies to the five Katoris, to the five Katoris and Atzothan.
That's only the Korbanos that have to do
So again, we're talking about these are korbanos. So you have the five hataris apnimius, which are all taken outside the machman burns. You also have then the paradrama, which is not a korban in the first place, although it has certain features of korbanos. And you have the third lazazel, which again is not a korban. No regular run-of-the-mill korban. Okay. So all those cases, So all those cases, the Tamid Gadim, in all those cases, as we said, the people who are involved with taking it to Azazel or burning it or carrying it, as the case may be, all of them are Tamid Gadim, all of them become Tomei and their clothes become Tomei, because some of them it says explicitly in the Pasuk, some of them we learn it, as Rashi points out, by Gzeira Shava. We learn earlier in the Sefer that you have a Pasuk that implies that all the Chatoi, that all the Chatoris HaPnimiyot are similar, and therefore the rule of that they become Tomei and their clothes become Tomei applies to one set of them, the ones of Yom Kippur, then applies to the other ones as well. But the key thing is, the Braisa says, V'hein Achman Ein Metamim Godim. The Parah and the Parim themselves are not Metamim Godim. In other words, suppose somebody were to touch them, well, he's not involved with carrying them, he's not involved with burning them, nothing. Just you have, while the Tar and Sur of Yom Kippur, let's say, are in the Azara, or even outside the Azara, doesn't matter. While people are carrying them, or while before they're being carried, whatever, somebody walks over and touches them. But he's not otherwise involved. He doesn't become Tumma. So they're not in and of themselves the source of Tumma, it's only the fact that the people are carrying them that makes the Tumma, or burning them.
So
if a person comes and touches it, then he himself does not become Tumma, and neither do his clothes. Ava, Matamin Oichun Mashkin, but the Pura and the Purim are Matamis food and drink that touch them. So if you were, so if you have the Paradroma after the Shechter, right, so the Paradroma after the Shechter, or the Purim and Seirim, when they're being taken out to be burnt, if food or drink were to touch them,
directly,
then that food or drink would become Tomei. Effectively, what we're saying, give it a mayor, it's the point of the mayor, effectively what comes out, the mayor is saying is that the Paradroma and the Parim and Seirim and Estrafim are called a Rishon L'Tumah. They're not an Avatumah, because only as an Avatumah would they be able to be the family people. So they are an Avatumah relative to the people who are involved, who are directly involved with carrying and burning them. But regarding anybody, regarding anything else, they're considered only a Rishon L'Tumah. So they can be Metame food and drink and make them a Sheni L'Tumah, but they can't be Metame people, because for that you need an Avatumah. Give it a minute. An Avatama can be Matamic people, and Play Paris, a Rishon L'Tumah, or below, can only be Matamic food and drink. Vachachamimim, Nacham say, Poro Porim Matamic Oichlin, you're saying that this applies across the board to the Poro, to the Porim Hanisurafim, and the Poro Adroma, and the Poro Meshalach. So the Chachamim say, fine, we can agree with you, Rav Meir, about the Poro and the Porim, Matamin Oichlin Mashkin, that they can be Matamic food and drink, that touches them, but Sarah Mashalach ain't Matamah, but the Sarah Mashalach can't be Matamah food or drink that touches it. Shokai, because the line, Sakai ain't Matamah, or Son of Mashkin. A living animal is not subject to Tumma. You never have a case where, well, almost never, you have a case where a living animal is capable of becoming Tumma or being Matamah or other things.
One case?
Well, you have the case, as I mentioned, in some places, if you were to take a live animal and use it as a golo or gofit, use it as like a maseva for over a grain, then it would become tamei. But that's pretty much the end of the case. Yeah. So the chacham said, third of a shalaya, when it's alive, when it's being taken out of the azara and led to azazel, it's not going to be tamei. Food or drink, because it's live. Ba'chai and tamei is on a mashkin. Okay. So we have to figure out the shleimer of a mayor. I can understand where a mayor is shita. Why he's saying that this rule about food and drink applies to all three groups, the Parim and the Parah and the Sarah and the Shalayah, we can understand. Because it's Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, because it's like what they taught a Braisa in Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, namely they taught a Braisa as follows. Now, where do we know the concept of Tumas Oichlin? Where do we know the concept that food can become Tomei and can make other things Tomei? So the Pasuk tells us in Parashat Shmini that if a nevela, for example, falls, I'll call zera zerua. If a nevela of an animal, let's say, falls on or touches seeds that have of seeds of plants, edible seeds, let's say, so then they're not metabol tumah. They need to first become wet with one of the shiva mashkin. The next part continues that if water, we learn that it's not only water but any of the shiva mashkin falls on seeds, or the seeds fall into water or whatever, somehow they get wet with one of the shiva mashkin, and then an avela or other source of tumah touches them, and then they become tumah. Right. So, Tumah Dvei Rabbi Shmuel says, when it says, Al-Kozera Zeruah, why are we using that to seeds as an analogy? We're saying like this, Ma'zroyim Shein Sosim L'Tamit Tumah Hamura. Now, when it comes to seeds, food, that is, it's not going to happen that there's nothing that's going to happen to them that's going to end up, they're going to be a tumah hamura, a high level of tumah, with a high level of tumah meaning an ava tumah. Food is not going to become an ava tumah. Food can only be a vlada tumah, rishon or lower. So Tana Veda Bishmal says like this. So seeds or other kinds of food, so seeds are not choy from the tamei tumah hamura, because you never have a case where seeds that became tamei are able to be matamei a person or be matamei tamei. Fine, now we're giving seeds as an example, but the point is that we're drawing an analogy. And they require hechsher, they have to become wet first with one of the shiva mashkin in order to become tamei. Tumah hamura means ava tumah. The same way, any other thing that is never going to become a tumah hamura, that's never going to become an ava tumah, srichin hechsher, that in order for them to be able to become tumah, and in order for them to be able to transmit tumah, they need to have hechsher. Yosta nivlas oyster. So Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel says that comes to exclude the nevela of a kosher bird. We learned earlier in the Masechta a few times that a kosher bird, a kosher species of bird, if it becomes a nevela, if it wasn't shechted properly, then when a person swallows a kibbutz of it, then he becomes tame, and his clothes become tame. So therefore, now that's tumah hamura, that there you have food that's able to make a person become tame. You have, by the way, there are cases where food can make a person tame midrabbanan. Midrabbanan, a person eats tame food, he becomes tame, but we're talking on Zaraita, alright, right. So yotza nivlas oifter, shesoifa l'tame, tumah hamura, it's able to, the end is going to be, if somebody eats it, it's going to be metame tumah hamura, it's going to become an avatuma and make him tame. If the nivlas oifter is swallowed by a person, then he becomes...
It was shechted in a non-kosher way.
We learned earlier in the fact that the liquor was done, but it turned out to be a fossil carbon. Right. Nevela means anything that died without proper shechted. Okay. So that's shesoifa l'tamei tumah hamura. In the end, it's going to cause a tumah hamura, because if a person swallows it, they're going to become tamei. Therefore, ve'im tzricha. Therefore, says Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, we learn from the fact that the pasuk mentions Zroyim as an example, that therefore the Nivlas Oyster does not need to have water or one of the Shiva Mashkin fall on it in order to be able to be Mekamim. And not only to be Mekamim the person, but also to have Tumas Oyster. So in other words, the idea would be that if this Nivlas Oyster, without any Hechsher, if other food touches it, it will become tamei. That's what Rabbi Shmuel is saying. If you have regular food that can only become a rishon or lower, needs hechsher. This that is capable of being an ava tumah does not require hechsher in order to be metamei other foods. It's metamei them just by touching them. Well, so that's the Tana of Rabbi Shmuel. Well, right. So Rabbi Meir agrees. So Rabbi Meir then follows that opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. Therefore, by the same logic, he says all these three groups, the parim and the para and the sarah and the shamayah, all of them are safe from the tamei tumah hamura, because all of them, people who are involved with them become tamei. The para adruma, the people who are involved with burning it, and so forth. The parim and itzrof, and the people who are involved with carrying it and with burning it. The third and mishaleach, the person who's involved with taking it out to our gadol. All those. That's not the point. The point is they're all tamei tumah hamura one way or another. The tumah hamura again, meaning that they're capable of being the tamei people. All of them are capable of being the tamei people. It's not the normal kind of tumah where the tumah is caused by touching it or carrying it or what have you, but it's a different kind of tumah. But still, the fact is, they're capable of causing it, or they're capable of being a tumah hamura. Therefore, according to Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel's rule, they shouldn't require hechsher, and that's why Rabbi Meir can be saying that if they touch food, then that food automatically becomes tumah. Fine. But the Chachamim, Elul Rabbanim, but we have to ask, how are the Rabbanim holding? They who disagree with Rabbi Meir and say, we'll accept your logic when it comes to the para and the parim. But we don't accept your logic when it comes to the sarah and the shalayach, and the sarah and the shalayach of a live animal, and live animals can't become tamei. It may be a live animal, but it's still metamei tumah hamura. What are they holding? if they agree with Tanadrei Rabbi Shmuel, I feel the third Amishkaleach, then it should apply to the third Amishkaleach as well. It doesn't matter that it's alive, because the point is not that it's in the Beira, the point is that it's in the Tamar, from a Chamura, which it is.
But only the people who carry
it. Well, only the people who are leading it, so only the people who are leading it, so as well, so fine, but that one person becomes Tamar, from, now he doesn't have to carry it, most of the time he doesn't have to carry it. He walks with it. He leads it to Azazel. He leads it on the 12-mil walk from Yerushalayim to Azazel. And then throws it off of it. So if the Rabbanon agree with Tanit Great Rabbi Shmuel, then they should say this rule applies to the third Amishkaleach also. Fine, it's a live animal, and live animals are not usually the Tamid. But in this case, this particular live animal isn't the Tamid, the person who's leading it. So the same rule should apply. If they agree with Tanit Great Rabbi Shmuel, and then presumably they do, since they say about Torah and Parim, and if they don't agree with Tanit Great Rabbi Shmuel at all, they hold that even things that are Matamid Tumah Chamura still require measure. Afilu Paro Porim and all of them. Where are they getting to say that the Paro or the Paro Adruma or the Porim and Yisrafim, that if food touches them, it should become Tumah, right? Without, presumably without measure. He asked Rav Dimi Omar, so the answer is, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Amri B'ma Rava, they say in Eretz Yisrael, Slishkan Hechsher Tumah Mimakam Acher. They require Hechsher Tumah from some other place. Now those five words, Slich and Hechsher Tumah Mimakam Acher, you have almost, well that's the thing, you have almost as many explanations among the Rishonim as words in the phrase. You have I think, four, at least four different explanations that Rishonim have of this phrase, Slich and Hechsher Tumah Mimakam Acher. So Rashi starts by saying like this, that what it means is, we're going to say that both the mayor and the Rabbanon agree with Tanit Great Rabbi Shmuel, but they understand him a little bit differently. Rabbi Meir takes Rabbi Shmuel at face value. That's why he says it applies to the third Amishkaleach. The Chachamim say like this. If you have something, when you have regular food, which is not Tumah Chamura, then what does it mean? Hechsher Tumah Makam Acher means it has to become Tumah. It has to become Tomei first, for example, by touching a sheret, in order to be the Tamei other food. But when it comes to the story for the Tamei, to Mahamura, when it comes to the Torah and the Parim and so forth, it doesn't have to touch Tuma. It itself is the Tamei Tuma Faisin. But it has to be something that is susceptible to Tuma in the first place. The Torah and the Parim are susceptible to Tuma, because after all, they're shechted already, they're dead, therefore they're susceptible to Tuma. Whereas the third Amishkaleach is the Chlal not susceptible to Tumah, because it's a live animal. Therefore, the Chacham would say, we are going to make that distinction. We accept Tanit Rei Rabbi Shmuel's distinction between regular food, which is not an Avat Tumah, and Soy for the Tamei Tumah Chamura. But we're going to say that Soy for the Tamei Tumah Chamura applies only to things that, in and of themselves, are capable of becoming Tumah. Like if they cut the Sheret, so what happens? The third Amishkaleach, since it's not capable of becoming Tomei, if a sheret touches it, nothing happens, for example, therefore it's not capable of transmitting Tumah to food. This is how that happens. Exactly. Right. I mean, we're mentioning the third Amishkaleach only because it's third for the Tamei Tumah Chamura. So in other words, the mayor is going to say it doesn't matter. I don't care the fact that the third Amishkaleach is not capable of receiving Tumah from someone else. It's capable of transmitting Tumah to the person who's leading it off to Azazel. Therefore, it's also capable at the same time of transmitting Tumah to food and drink. Whereas the Chachamim are going to say, we do accept Tanit Rei Rabbi Shmuel's concept, but we're going to say there's a difference between regular foods and things that are sort of a Tanit Tumah Chamura. However, we're going to limit that, the application of that rule, only to things that are capable of becoming Tumah from something else. So we're going to say regular food that's capable of becoming Tumah from something else needs to actually touch something else that's Tumah in order to transmit Tumah. So you have regular seeds, for example, once water has fallen on them. So if a sheret touches them, they're going to become tummy, they're going to become a rishon l'tuma. And then they're capable of then if they touch other foods, it becomes a shemi l'tuma. They're going to say, when it comes to the parah and the parim, fine, we don't require a sheret to touch them first. They themselves are a source of tumah. So the fact that they are capable of becoming tamei from something else, if a sheret were to touch them, they would become tamei like any other food. Therefore, the Chachamim are going to say that because they're capable of receiving tumah, let's say from a sheret, therefore even without the sheret being involved, they're capable of transmitting tumah to food. As opposed to the third Amishkaleach, the Chachamim are going to say, since they're not capable of receiving tumah from something else. Therefore, it can't transmit to a bunch of food.
So
that's how rational
regular food.
For regular food, you have to have the regular. So you're going to say like the Chacham are going to say regular food. You have to have a two-step process for it to be made. Well, three steps really for it to be metame other food. It has to be mukshal kabel truma. Number one, water or one of the sugar mashim that's fall on it. Number two, it has to be touched by a sheret or something else which is metame it. Number three, then it has to touch other food and be metame. When it comes
once it touches the sheret, becomes
then it becomes tummy. Now
it's
transmitted to another food, right? That's what we're going to say by regular food. When it comes to nidlas oif tahar, for example, or something else that's soif latame from a chamorah, the chachamim are, or all the chachamim are saying is fine. Based on tana greda mishmal, we can skip the step where they're touched by a shem. They're automatically a source of trauma. So therefore, Rashi actually doesn't clarify whether he means that they're going to have to be touched by water first, whether they're first going to have half share from one of the Shiva Mashkin. Rashi doesn't clarify that point, or whatever. So we don't know whether we can skip that step. We know we can skip the Sheret step, and all we need is for them to touch other food in the family. But the point is, the difference is, those things are capable, if the Sheret were to touch them, they would become tunnels. As opposed to, the Chachamim are going to say, the third of a Shalaya, if the Sheret touches it, nothing happens. It's a live animal. Therefore, we don't hold that kind of the Beit HaMishmal's rule would apply to such a thing. Therefore, we don't say that it's capable of causing trauma to other food.
They hold it even live.
Well, the kind of the Beit HaMishmal didn't specify. The kind of the Beit HaMishmal was talking about you've lost a child or dead. The mayor is deducing from that it applies, doesn't matter whether it's living or dead. The fact that it's from the family from a Hamura is enough for that. The Chachamim said that you need another factor as well. You have to have it that's capable of becoming trauma from something else.
And being live, it
can't. Right. That's how Rashi. Then you have the Rambam takes a whole different take. The Rambam takes a whole different path on this and explains that we're dealing with over here in order the Chachamim would say in order for the Parah or the Parim to be able to transmit so much of food, you would have to have a machshava on them that you plan to eat them, and then that's what we're talking about. So, therefore, by the Sarah Mashallah, that's not relevant to the Machshava, for it doesn't help. It's still alive. Then you have the Raivim comes in and says, I don't know what the Rambam is talking about. He quotes our Gemara over here. And he gives two possible explanations. One of them is similar to Rashi's explanation, except that he clarifies that we are talking about that they would have to become wet first in order to transmit trauma to something else. And then the Raivim is original, of course. Then you have a whole different explanation that the Raivad gives. All these various explanations so far assume that the Chachamim do agree with Tanad Reda Bishmal. They're just disagreeing with the mayor how exactly they understand it. The Raivad's second answer is that the Chachamim are actually disagreeing with Tanad Reda Bishmal. They are saying that only things that are able to become Tomei, similar to what we said in the last part of Rashi, that only things that are capable of becoming Tomei can be Metame other people. But the difference is that here we're saying that they disagree with Tanit Brei Rabbi Shmuel's premise entirely. He was saying that the difference is so for the Tomei to Mahamura. They were saying, never mind, so according to the Raivad second explanation, the Chacham was saying, never mind so for the Tomei to Mahamura. Is it something that is, it would have to be something that actually became Tomei from something else, and only then can be the Tomei, other food. They wouldn't hold up the distinction of Tomei Zerah Bishmal between regular food and Tomei from Tomei to Mahamoto. They would say, regardless, it had to become Tomei, it's from something else, let's say from the sheriff, in order to transmit Tomei to other food. So therefore, according to his explanation, when the Chachamim are saying over here, Paro Parim, Mitzan and Othla Mashkin, Sarim and Shalayach Na, we're not talking about that potentially it could become Tomei. We're talking about when they actually became Tomei. The Paro or the Parim actually became Tomei, let's say from a Sheret, and now other food touches them.
Whereas
the Sarim and Shalayach, without that it would not be Mitzan, other food, according to the Chachamim.
Whereas
the Sarim and Shalayach is not relevant, it's alive, right? So those are the various explanations.
When a sheret touches it, an animal is alive, it doesn't become tummy.
That's the point. Therefore, the Chachamim, whereas Rav Meir would hold the Tana Dreda Bishmal. So, in particular, later on, when we get further along in the Sugya, there's something later on in the Sugya that seems to very strongly support that last explanation of the Raivim. Yeah. Anyway, let's go on. So these five words, Juchan Hechcher, Chomim, Makamaka, end up being this big complicated thing. Part of the problem is also because when the Gemara is using the word Hechcher, Choma, it's not so clear. What do we mean? Do we mean Hechcher can mean one of two things? It can mean becoming wet, which we call Hechcher Mayim, it's called, or becoming Tomei by having something Tomei Tucher, which is called Hechcher Shed. The Gemara didn't clarify over here whether it meant Hechcher Mayim or Hechcher Sheret. That's part of what leads to it. Boy, Rabbi Loza. Purim and Nisra, Urim and Nisra. Okay, so Rabbi Loza asked the following. The Purim and Nisra, Urim and Nisra. Maushi Yitamu Oichun and Mashkin to the Bifnin Tabachot. Let's say, okay, so we establish now according to the mayor and we establish now according to the mayor and according to the Chachamim in varying ways that the Purim and Seir and Esrachim are able to do the Tamei food and drink. What would happen? Would they be the Tamei food and drink while they're still inside the Azara, just as they would when they're taken out of the Azara? So food or drink, would it touch them while they're in the Azara? Would it become Tamei? The question is, Mechusa Yisiyah to Mechusa Maisadami, do we consider the fact that it has yet to be taken out, is consider that there's still an essential Maisa missing, therefore they're not yet Mitame, we would say there still has to be the Maisa of taking them out in order for them to be Mitame food and drink. Or maybe not, maybe the taking it out is not considered a significant enough Maisa to make a difference.
We set up so here that it was.
Well, we didn't know. We were just discussing the question that the fact that it's the time of food and drink. We know it has to be taken out. The question is that taking out considered a major enough maisa that it makes a difference that it only starts being the time of food and drink after it leaves the Azara, or maybe not? Actually, Tosef asked the question. Of course, it can't be the time while it's in the Azara. If it was, it would be the time of the Emurim while they're still inside. Tosef's answer is that the answer is, of course, having to cut out the Emurim obviously is considered a maisa. There's no question. They can't be the time of the Emurim while there's still that major maisa left to cut them out. We're talking about after that. After the Emurim are cut out, we're talking about if other food or drink stuff is there.
Where are they cut?
In the Azara. They have the base of the Bahayim, the area with the tables over there, with the tables and the books over there. So in other words, so they're shattered. The Kohen Gadol takes the blood of them and sprinkles them inside the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadosh and whatever. Then they take the Korbanos. They cut them open. They take out the Emurim and they take them to be burned on the Mizbeach. And the rest of the behemoth is carried out on poles to be taken and burned outside of Yerushalayim. So, the boy after Rabbi Elazar asked the question and he was able to answer it, yes, Mechosi Yisiyah to Mechosi Maisa Dami, yes, the lack of it being brought out is considered a major Maisa that's still missing, therefore it's not yet Metame anything until it actually leaves the Azara. And that's the halacha. Another question. Until it leaves the Azara. We were saying yesterday once we were over since we were talking about the case of Nivlas Oiftar, so now we're digressing a little bit to talk a little more about that. Besides which we had the mayor's opinion and we had the Chachamim's opinion, so we forgot to get into that. Nivlas Oiftar the mayor, according to the mayor, who is accepting what Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel says, that there's a difference between regular food and sofa l'tamei tumah chamura, such as the nivlas oif tahor, which can be metamei a person when he swallows it. So the nivlas oif tahor, maushi yitamei b'kazayis. Can it be metamei other food and drink if you only have a kazayis for this? Normally when it comes to tumas oichlin, you need a kabeza. But here, a kezayis of it is enough to be metamei the beis avliya. I think you have different opinions about that among the posts. You might have another opinion that it's closer to a third. But yeah. Anyway. The point is, all you need is a kezayis in order to be metamei the person who swallows it. Whereas for regular tumas oichlin, you need a kebeisa. It's actually my focus was shown in a number of places in chat. Is it that you need a kebeisa to become tomei in the first place, or is it that even a smaller amount than a kebeisa can become tomei, but you need a kebeisa to transmit tumah to something else? Anyway, so in this case, you have only a kezayis of it. Is that enough to be the tamei other, the according to the mayor, because tumah hamura to transmit tumah to something else? Oh, the matzah.
Not to receive, but you don't have to.
Well, it's not enough to receive that, then. If it wasn't a nivlas oif tahor, whether it would be enough to receive, that's the machlokes of Rashi and Tosfos. But in other places. But here we're talking about a kezayis is enough to do tumah hamorah. It's enough that if a person swallowed that kezayis, he becomes tumah. So tumah hamorah. So therefore, the machzal aron. Now, if that kezayis is lying on the floor or I guess on the table or something, loyti boilach, then there's no question because then for sure. The tumah hamura is not an immediate thing, not necessarily. The person never going to swallow it. Just because lying over there doesn't mean somebody's going to pick it up and eat it. Kitiboyla, on the other hand, the nukit, the tumah, on the other hand, if the person already has it in his mouth, then loitiboyla, then there's no question. So if he has a kazayat of the nivlach achara in his mouth, together with some other food, and he hasn't swallowed any of it, no question that food in his mouth becomes tumah from the nivlach achara, even before swallowing, because again, he himself won't become tumah until he swallows it. But the food or drink, you don't really have a machos of maitre. Because the point is, not machos of maitre. Rabbeinu was using the expression, soy from the tamay to machamorah. But soy from means basically that to be an immediate thing. Like you don't really require any great maitre in order for it to happen. So putting it in, once he puts it in his mouth, it's already, it's already halfway to being swallowed, yeah. The same thing when you have, let's say, a nevela sitting there, all you need is for the person to touch it and it becomes tummy. When you have the parim and sirim and the shirim, the people have to pick it up and start carrying it. All they have to do is walk out of the azar, carrying it and already in. Okay. Kitipoy locked and knocked like the yod. So, Rav Abba Bar Shmuel says, the question I have, rather, is what if the person is holding it in his hand? So the question is, do we say that the fact that he hasn't yet brought it to his mouth is considered a major maisa is missing, or maybe not? If we say a major maisa is missing, then it's not yet the tamay other food that he's also holding in his hand. If you say that it isn't, now that's not the chutz maisa, that it's already well on the way, it's being in his mouth because he already picked it up, presumably intending to eat it. That's what he's asking. Well, Basta de Baya Hodra Pashta, after he asked the question, he was able to answer it. Bringing it close to his mouth is not the equivalent of Mechosa Maisa. In other words, it's already Metame at that point. The fact that it's already in his hand, it's considered close enough to being swallowed, that it's able, according to the mayor, to be Metame foods and drinks.
So what do you say swallowing then?
Swallowing is Metame him. We're talking about Metame food and drink that it touches. In other words, what we're saying, and by the way, I mean, we have, our Gemara's have here, both of the boy, all the Pasha, Zashi and Shittim Kobesis instead have a Girsa Omalei. That's according to our version of the Gemara, Rabbi Abba Bar Shmuel asked the question, and he himself was able to answer it. According to Zashi and the Shittim Kobesis' version, Rabbi Chiyah Bar Abba answered the question for him. Anyway, either way, the point is, what it is like this. This is Lassa Ostar. While it's lying on the table, nothing. It's not even the time of food and drink. Once the person picks it up in his hand, then it becomes a Rishon Matumah. At that point, that's according to the Meir. Within the Meir's opinion. So once he picks it up, it becomes a Rishon Matumah. At that point, if it were to touch food and drink, they would become a Shein Matumah. He himself is not yet Tomei from it, because touching a Nivrat HaSara doesn't make a person Tomei. Even when he puts it in his mouth, also, it's going to be the Tamei any other food that's in his mouth. Again, it would make it a Shein Matumah, but it's not the Tamei in yet. Only when he swallows it will he himself and his clothes become tummy.
In other words, touching or taking it in his hand would enable to tell him to tie something else, but not him.
Right.
Okay. Swallowing would become him
right.
Also.
Yeah.
According to Rabbi.
That's what we're all saying within Rameh's opinion, right? Well, that's where we said before. We had, according to the various explanations before that we said about the Chachamim, maybe the Chachamim would agree with this, maybe not. Again, according to the Raiva of the second explanation, the Chachamim would disagree with this whole concept. Because they would say that the Nivlach HaTzara is only the Tamei other food, only if it itself became Tamei, like regular food. According to all the other explanations, they may not require that. They may say that the Nivlach HaTzara is dissimilar from other kinds of food and doesn't require the same hechter to be the Tamei. So, well, that's one point. The fact that we're talking within Rameh's opinion and the fact that the Gemara is going to go on to try and figure out whether the Mishnah and Taurus is according to the Meir or according to the Chachamim, if we accept that Girsa, and we don't necessarily, because the Shittim HaKobesis, for example, changes the Girsa, but the Girsa that we have in our Gemara over here, the next little piece over here, supports the Ravid's position that the Chachamim and the Meir, in fact, disagree about the Nivrat HaTzara business. That only the mayor would be the one who says that because it's so from a Tamei Tumah Hamura, it doesn't require Hechsher Tumah. when required to become tameh from something else, and the Chachamim will disagree with that. And the Chachamim will disagree with that and say it's like any other food, it needs to become tameh for itself. Okay. So he asked him as follows. So again, Rav Abba Bar Shmuel, Rav Abba Bar Memel, actually, we should talk about the changes of the two, had asked the Kriya Bar Abba the question. We said either Rav Abba Bar Memel himself answered it, or Rav Kriya Bar Abba answered it for him. So Eise, now he asks him, so depending on which Girsa we accept and who asks who, we learn that the first Mishnah of Masechta Taras starts out as follows. Shloishas Advarim Nemru B'Nivlach Oif Tahor, there are 13 rules that apply to the Nivela of an Oif Tahor, the Ze'ech man, and one of the ones, and one of them is as follows, one of the ones that's in that Mishnah, we're not going to list all 13, but we're going to list a few of them, and one of them is relevant for our purpose. Number one, Sricha Machshava, it requires Machshava, which means, Rashi says that what we mean by Sricha Machshava is, suppose you have less than a Kazayah for this. So we're talking even, it's not enough to be the Tamil to Chosim, it's not even close to the Tamil to Machalorah. So then, you would need Machshava for less than a Kazayah for that to join together with other food to be able to become Tamil. In other words, so if you had a half a kezayis of this niblach oif tahor, if you didn't have any particular machshava on it, and you had one kebetza minus half a kezayis of other food, you combine them together, they would not be, it would not become tameh, because that niblach oif tahor, the pashkus is not food. It's not food by default, because people don't usually eat it. But if you had machshava about it, that is where it would combine with the rest of it, and now it could all become tameh with regular trumah oif.
And that's according.
So that's number one. That's number one. And by the way, I mean, so Mefoshim asked the question, why, among others, Rabbi Akiva Eger on the side over here asked the question, why is Rashi finding such a convoluted way of explaining it? Why not just say straight out, it requires machshava, whether it itself is able to be metame other food and drink. And in fact, so he points out in Nidah, in fact, Rashi explains the Gemara in Nidah that discusses this also, and Rashi is there explaining differently. So Acharonim explained, the idea is, because at this point in the Gemara, we want to assume that we're talking specifically a point to Reb Meir. Reb Meir is the one who says the Tumah Hamura business. So therefore, we're trying to make it, work according to Reb Meir, right? Okay. The Ein Tzricha Hechsher, but number two, rule number two of a Nivlach Oifer, it doesn't require Hechsher to be Metame other things. It doesn't need water to fall on it, it doesn't need a sheriff to touch it. Again, because Tumah Hamura, now on the face of it, that's only according to Reb Meir. And rule number three is that if you have a kabeza of it, then it's able to be metame other food. So my lav Reb Meir, so shouldn't we say that this Mishnah is according to Reb Meir? Now the point is, Rashi says, again, we have the threefold distinction we made before, whether it was on the floor, in his hand, or in his mouth. So if it's on the floor, then of course it should need hechsher. It's not, yes, on the face of it, it should require hechsher. If you're going to say that it's in his mouth, then of course it already had a machshava. So therefore, because obviously he put it in his mouth, he tends to eat it. Machshava to eat it, exactly. Machshava meaning that it's food, that he considers it food, and therefore that it's involved with Tumas Ochlin. So obviously we have to be talking about the case where he's holding it in his hand. That's the only case on the face of it where we can say that it's sort of in that limbo state. It requires machshava to be considered food, but because he could be picked it up for some other reason. So we have to have machshava that he plans to eat it, but it doesn't require hechsher. Now that, and we're saying that you need a kabeza of it, because we said we're chama chama sa from the kabeza. So on the face of it, that only works according to the mayor. So therefore, because the Chachamim would, because the mayor is the one who said the whole business about Tumah Hamura, and who said that it doesn't require hechsher. Again, here's where we start seeing that this seems to work out much better according to the Ravid's second explanation, that a mayor and a Chachamim are in fact disagreeing. The answer is no, not necessarily. You could say that Mishnah and Rabbanan. You could say that Mishnah goes according. You could say that Mishnah goes according to the Rabbanan. You could say that even let's say when what would we say? Tzricha machshava and tzricha hechsher. Fine, we would say that the chachamim could be drawing a distinction between nivlas or tahor. And no, not the chachamim could be. No, we would say that we said dafka kabeisa, but maybe not. Maybe it means that it would apply. Maybe it would mean that it would apply to a kazayas. We ask the question: if you have a kazayas on the floor, what would be the din according to the mayor? And we're answering based on this mishnah that it seems you need a kabeisa. Or rather, not on the floor and it's in his hand, but not necessarily. We could say it's according to the Rabbanon, and you need dafka kabeisa.
But no.
So the question is, what we started saying, the first thing we said is that it requires machshava and it doesn't require hechsher. Uman shamet lehaisvada. And now, who we found in this discussion who said that? That's your mayor. That's specifically the mayor. Again, if you want to arrive at that, works very nicely because only the mayor holds that. Shittim Kabesis, in fact, changes the girsa in the Gemara over here because he says, and on the side of it here, you can see a note. Sorach Iyun Rab. You can see a note here from the third Rab. Sorach Iyun Rab. It needs tremendous analysis to understand why should we say specifically according to the mayor if on the face of it, according to Rashi and according to the Rabbi's first explanation and according to the Rambam, the mayor and the Chachamim agree on the basic concept. We need the Rabbi's second answer in order to make it work. Umidureisha the mayor. Right. So if we say that the reisha, the first two things in the mission, the tzricha machshava and tzricha hechsher, is according to the mayor, say for now you're a mayor, and the next part must also be according to the mayor. Usually, it must be mediator. Yeah. What kind of an argument is that? Halkidisa or halkidisa? One is the way it is. You can have part of it according to the mayor and part of it according to the mayor. Okay, what about going to the Sefer? But then let's continue later on in the list you have at the end of the list of 13 rules that apply to a Nivlat Esar. It says, Shchitasa umlikasa mtaheres chilekasa mtumasa, that if the bird is shechted, or if malika is done to it, then even though the bird turns out to be chilek, it's not mtame, the tumah of Nivlat Esar anymore, because it was shechted, or because a proper shechter or a proper malika was done. Uman shamet lehai svara. And who did we find who had that svara? Reb Meir. We said Reb Meir, because we had earlier, back in Perek Chatzas Ha'Oyer, from the seventh Perek, we had a three-way machlokes on the question of if malika was done to a bird, and then it turned out that it was chilek, therefore it's possible for a korban. We said Reb Meir said it's not metame. He said, the mayor said it's not Matame. Rabbi Yehuda said it is. And Rabbi Yehuda also says that it is because he says that only Shchita could be Matahere, not Melissa. So Rabbi Meir is the one who says it's not Matame. So therefore, that last part. So you have a case, again. You had a case where a bird was shechted or Melissa was done to it, and it turned out to be Tereza. It turned out to have an internal defect that made it Tereza. We had a three-way machlokes. We had the mayor say it doesn't matter. It's not the tame as nivlas oitzahar anymore because the shchita or the malika itself was done properly. We had Rabbi Yehuda saying that it's matame, that it is matame because the fact that it's on that shchita. And we had Rabbi Yosi saying that since the mayor, you brought up a logical argument, a kavachomer, whatever. So fine. We'll accept that it applies to shchita just like it does to an animal, but not malika. But only the mayor holds that Malika and Shchita are able to be Matahara of what would otherwise have been a Nivlat Esar. That's the point. If the Mishnah says Shchitasa only cost us Matahara Shchitasa, that would could only be according to the mayor. Man Shamus Lehai Svara, who do we find has that Svara? The mayor. So you're going to tell me Reisha is safer, the mayor of Yachid Abanon. So what are you going to tell me? The beginning part of the Mishnah, Shricha Machshava Vain Shricha Hechsher is according to the mayor. And the next part, Matama Tumas Erchon, the Kabesa, is only according to the Rabbanon, because you'd say according to the mayor of Kazayas is enough. And then you're going to say back at the end, we go back to the mayor? Yeah. The answer is, yes. Yeah. They should have said to the mayor and the Rabbanon. Yes, we can do that. We can do that. Sometimes a Mishnah will do that. Which is in the middle part where it said that Matama Tumas Erchon, the Kabesa, we could say is according to the Chacham, not necessarily according to the mayor. The mayor might hold that a Kazayas is enough. Again, because Tumah Chamura, because a Kazayas, if there's enough to be Matame a person, once he swallows it, then that, you don't need a Kabesa, Kazayas is less than a Kabesa, so you don't need a full Kabesa for that purpose. Because Tumah Chamura, so even a Kazayas is good, whereas since the Mishnah says the Kabesa, that would be a coincidence of Abanon, yeah, we could say that the Mishnah is combining together opinions of a mayor and opinions of a Chamura. Okay. further on this topic of Nivlach Dois Tahar, on the letter of Hamnuna, letter of Zeta. Rav Hamnuna says to Rav Zeta, like, Lois tasted Akarach, do not sit down on your legs, which basically means, as Rashba elsewhere explains, that I mean, don't sit, it's a short way of saying, don't sit up, stay standing on your feet. Abda Amrit is on your, well, Akarach literally means your feet, your legs, your feet, whatever. So you could understand it in those days, a sat cross legged, so when you sat down, then literally you sat like hot off on your legs, but I think the Rashba explains that it means it's a shorthand way of saying, don't, no, Tera means the lower leg. But anyway, don't sit down, stay standing on your feet, Abda Amritli Hom Milsa, until you tell me the answer to the following question. Now, why is he telling them to stay standing? A couple of the Achronim talk about different ideas. There's a Gemara in Megillah that mentions that up until the time of Rav Gamliel HaZaken, people used to learn Torah standing. After that, people became weaker, and therefore they had to sit when they learned Torah. And the Gemara explains over there at the end of the story over there, Rava explains that there's a distinction between difficult and easy parts of Torah. The difficult parts, they would always sit because they have to concentrate on it. The easier parts, they were able to stand. So therefore, it's the one explanation. The Aruch on there gives an explanation that he's saying, like, this is such an easy question that you should be able to stand and answer this. The Ben Yehoyah just says, this that I'm asking you is such a precious thing to me, I consider it like one of those ancient Torahs from the times of Gamliel or earlier, so I want to hear it standing like they did in that place. Anyway, the question is, like, Nivlas Ois Tahar Lera Meir. Again, according to the Meir, that we say a Nivlas Ois Tahar is because Sposal Tame Tumah Chamura, because it's capable of making a person Tame unlike regular food. Therefore, the Meir is saying that the regular rules of Tumas Oslin don't apply to it. What about, would we say, according to the Meir, Moinim La Rishin Vashemi, or Ein Moinim Rishin Vashemi? Okay, but do we still count from it Rishin and Shemi? In other words, do we say that it itself, therefore, is a Rishon, and what it touches is a Sheni, and then if that touches food of Truma or Kodshim, then it becomes a Sheni. The bird itself, the Nivlas Ois Tahar itself, would be the Rishon, and then you would have a Sheni from it. Or Ein Moinin Rishon the Sheni. Or maybe Rameyah would say, since eventually maybe Rameyah would say like this, since eventually it's going to become Truma Chamora, so even now, we would say that the food that it touches becomes a rishon l'truma, and we're not even gonna start counting that. In other words, basically the question is, would we say according to the mayor that the bird itself, the nivlas ois tahar, is an avatruma for this purpose or a rishon l'truma? If we say it's a rishon l'truma, then the food it touches becomes a shani. If we're going to say it's an abatruma, then we're going to say that the food that it touches becomes a rishon, and maybe even we, yeah. There's also then if that food touches other food, what happens? Yes. Amalei. So he answers like this: Kol hechad b'natama odem maga. The rule is as follows: only things that are able to be natame a person by touching them, moinin by rishon v'sheni. So you have the rule where rishon and sheni apply to it. When you have something like this, like the Nivlas Ois Tahar, where a person doesn't become Tomei by touching it, only by swallowing it, then Ein Moinin by Rishon V'Sheni, then the Rishon and Sheni rules don't apply to it. We don't count within it Rishon and Sheni.
No,
because a mess is capable of being the Tomei of a person by touching it. A mess is also capable of doing Tumas Oel. But a Nivlas Ois Tahar is not capable at all. A person touches it, he doesn't become Tameh.
Swallows
it. Only swallows it, he becomes Tameh. Exactly. So in other words, Rashi says, when it comes to a sheret, then you have the rule that the sheret itself touches a keli. So the keli is a rishon, and the food that's inside the keli is a sheni. Here, what you would have, okay, Moinim Lo Rishon V'Sheni, actually, I didn't explain it properly. Moinim Lo Rishon V'Sheni would mean that we would say that the Nivlas Ois Tahar would be like a sheriff in that sense. It would be an avatruma, it would be a tamer keli, and if there's food inside that keli, then it would become a sheni. Or do we say not, only if it touches the food directly? So he answers him, because it's not the tamer person, the maga, therefore the rules like a sheriff don't apply. Instead, to that extent, even the mayor is going to consider it like food that's tamei, where all it can do is make the food that it touches a shame.
following includes Saga, doesn't it?
Not necessarily. You could have, for example, we're going to talk about actually at the beginning of the, we're going to talk about later on actually that you could have conceivably, we're going to talk at the beginning of the next setup, you could have, for example, somebody takes it on a long stick or something and sticks it into the person's mouth. Yeah. Touching in base that started in the inner part of the body is usually not considered touching at all, right? Yeah.
So
that's the answer. Mernim lo rishon v'sheni again would have meant that we treat it like a sher. That's the keli that it touches becomes a rishon, and the food inside of the keli becomes a sheni. Ein mernim rishon v'sheni would mean that the nivlas of tahor itself is a rishon, and the food itself, and then the food itself becomes a sheni. That's how it is. So we don't start doing rishon and sheni within the kelim, only within the foods themselves, because it's not the time of mind. So now Rav Zera asked a question by Rav Ami Bar Chiya, but Ami Lomir of Oven Bar Kahana, or some say he asked by Rav Oven Bar Kahana. How about this? This isn't directly related to what we were talking about, but it's a similar kind of question about Moinin Barush and the Sheni and now. Chibure Oichlin Aydei Mashkin. If you have food that's connected together using liquid. So Rashi gives an example. Let's say you have a half a kazayas of nevela here and a half a kazayas of nevela there. And then you have liquid, then you have liquid on a tray, let's say, between them. So chibur l'truma kala. So we say it connects them as far as truma kala, in the sense that now if food were to touch one of these half kazayas, then it would become tamei because they're considered to be connected by the liquid. The ein chibur l'truma chamura, but they're not considered connected as far as truma chamura. They're not metame people in kelim. Rashi says I don't understand why there should be a distinction between them. Why should it be metame only food if they're connected by liquid and not kelim? Tosfos discusses a bit over here in Dibra Maskol Chibura. Tosfos talks about a couple of possibilities. One of them is maybe we're talking about over here where the food is not just touching the liquid, but that it's actually they're like partially dissolved in the liquid and sort of like sticking together.
The food, the truma, the
nevela, for example. Also Tosfos deals with there's an issue involved over here called chibure odam, like Gemara mentioned in some other places, that you have when you have different things of food are connected together by human hands, meaning in other words, let's say you take different pieces of food and stick them out down to a toothpick or something, so now they're connected together, they're not necessarily considered to be connected. But here also, where they're connected by something artificial, so to speak, the liquid between them, that's not necessarily a full connection. Anyway, again, the question is, if they ask, again, do we count Rishon and Sheni, the usual rules over here again, or not? Would we say the Kalium and the food, or not? Amalei, and he says the same thing. Kol hecha de metame adam, only when it's metame a person, moinin by Rishon and Sheni, only then do we count Rishon and Sheni, etc. But kol hecha de metame adam, ain moinin by Rishon and Sheni. If it's not metame a person, then those rules don't apply. The food that touches it becomes tame and that's that. The Rambam actually seems to understand the question a little bit differently, that the question is, in other words, the question isn't like Rashi is saying, where you have a half kazayas and nevela and another half kazayas and they're connected by liquid, but rather the case would be, let's say for example, you have a bunch of lumps of food in one container and liquid connecting them. If you have, let's say, if a sheris were to touch one of them, it becomes a rishon. Do we say the rest of them also become a rishon because they're connected to it by the liquid, or not? And then we would say the first one is a rishon, and the second one is a sheni, and so.
They have to be completely wet all around.
They have to have become wet at some point in order to be mukshal lekabel tumah in the first place.
Right.
But here we're talking about that already took place previously. Here we're talking about that you have, let's say, some liquid in a pan. Imagine, for example, let's say you're frying lobster or something. You have a pan full of lobster. You have the oil on the pan, which is connecting them together. And you have a face olive oil, that's one shiva mashkin. And you have one lasket here, one lasket here, one lasket here. So now the sheriff touches one of them. Would we say all of them become a rishon? Or would we say the first one's a rishon, the second one's a sheni, and only if they're truma, would the third one, or kodshin, would the third one become a shlishin? well, so the Rambam actually, first of all, understands it that way, but second of all, the Rambam also understands, unlike our Gemara over here, that the question has not been resolved, which leads the Raiva to ask, why not? The Gemara clearly says it has been resolved. The one, the Kesef Mishnah points out, this isn't the only Gemara that bears on this. There's also, he points out, there's a Gemara in Nachas, or Kulin, I don't remember, that also bears on this, and discusses this issue and comes out with Teiku, so that Amma may have understood, therefore the fact Gemara is the primary thing, and then therefore we, there's a primary source, and this is just fine. Rav Ami Bachir, Rav Oven Bakahana answers this, but it's not necessarily the last word on the subject. Some others, some Achronim talk about that the Rambam may have had a different girsa over here, that instead of where he answers him, the rule is Kolecha v'Netama Adam, he may have been asking the question, is it that Kolecha v'Netama Adam, Monin Berushin Rishani, and if not, then not, or is it not? And then according to that, the question was left unresolved, which is why the Rambam would be saying that it's left So in the example of Lachis, you would have a suffix, okay. Therefore you would have to, misuffix, you'd have to consider them all a Rishi. The lactus themselves cannot be the tamei of person, right? They're not the tamei of chamora. But therefore, we're saying that since it's a suffix, according to the Rambam's understanding of the Gemara over here, since it's left as a suffix, we would have to say the suffix, all those lactus would be considered a rishon lechomer in that case. Unlike if we said if the question is resolved, we'd say only the first one would be a rishon, the second one would be a sheni, and the third one already would be good. Fine.
Between them?
Yes, because they're connected by mashke.
The third one would be like the second one then.
Why?
What's the difference between the third one?
Well, okay, fine. I mean,
the mashke connects them all.
That's the point. That's why you have the suffix. The mashke is connecting them, but on the other hand, maybe that's not enough for them to be considered completely connected. The fact is they're not melting one into the other. They're still separate lakshas in the pan.
Well, yeah, but I mean, how can you say there's a second one? I'd say the third one is the second one, and the second one is the third one.
Then you should say the same thing about the first one.
Well, the first one became Tumet.
The first one became Rishon. That's the question. Does it now, so if it's touching the second
one. And the third one are the same. Just if you move the.
No. Okay. So maybe, yes. Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. Fine. No, but if they're in a row, let's say, maybe Lactis in it, or maybe, you know, I gave the example of Lactis. Yeah, we have one after the other. Yeah, so maybe not Lactis in the pan. Yeah.
Between
it, yeah.
Not surround.
Yeah. Okay. Let's say.
Okay.
Okay. On.
Okay.
Yeah. Yostu Eilevelu. Getting back now to the Mishnah, which is talking about the Purim and Tirim and Nisrofim, about the people who carry them out becoming Tom. So the Mishnah said Yostu Eilevelu. We said that the groups, the two groups who are carrying it, one from the front, one from the back, they become Tom. We said that if the first ones went out and the last one didn't yet, only the first ones are Tom, the last ones are not Tom yet.
That's a good rule.
Well, yeah, it's a good rule. So Menahan and Yuri. Now, but the last one, right. But in any case, though, what we're going to deal with in the Gemara over here is not so much that. We dealt with that issue before. But where do we know that they carry it outside Yerushalayim? We said in the Mishnah that they take it outside to the Beis Hadeshin and burn it over there. Where do we know that from? Menahan and Yuri.
Where do we know
that they have to be taken completely outside Yerushalayim? Okay. Well, now we're going to have the answer. The Tanan Ablan, and it's like this. We learn in a Blaisa. Lahalanu oimachut the Gimel Machnes. Elsewhere. Now again, yes. Outside of all three Machnes, right? So again, you have the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, where the Pasuk says Yotzi on the Chutz Machnes. Then you have the Par Helam Davashol Tzibur and the Par Koyin Mashiach, where the pasuk implies over there that you have to burn them chutz l'shalosh machnas. So lahalanu oimer chutz l'gimel machnas. So elsewhere, meaning by the power of Karin Mashiach and the power of Helam Davar Shal Tzibur, the pasuk says or implies that it's outside the three machnas. Can, whereas over here, when it comes to the Karbonis of Yom Kippur, chutz l'machna achas, it seems to only say one machna, because just as yoytzi omer chutz l'machna, you could understand that to mean only machna shchina, the azara. So what does it mean? Loi malach. That teaches you, kiven shiyotza chutz machna achas, as soon as it's taken out, you have to take it outside all three machnas. But as soon as you take it out of one machna, as soon as you take it out of the azara, mitame begadim, then at that point the people become tamim. So that's when the chachamim in our Mishnah say that as soon as they leave the azara, they become tamim, that's where they're getting it from.
Okay,
so it's machna. It just is machna. V'hi gufa menolan. Okay, when it comes to this itself, this that we're saying by the other korbanos, by the par helam dover and par koyin mashiach, that they have to be burned outside all three machnas. Where are we getting that from? So the Tana Rabbana. We learn another like this. When the pasuk says by the par koyin mashiach, v'hoisias kol apara al mechutz machne, the pasuk says you should take the whole par outside the machne. That means one second. Chutz v'gimel machnas. That means outside all three machnas. After Omer, wait. Help us. After Omer chutz l'sholosh machnas. After Omer chutz v'gimel machnas. So you're saying that's what it. This is how these brayos usually go in Torah Chayim or whatever. They start with the conclusion and then they explain how we reach that conclusion. After Omer chutz v'gimel machnas. So you're telling me that it has to be outside all three machnas, outside Yerushalayim. Or in El Machnas. That's maybe it just means outside one machna. Maybe it means outside the Azara. No. True Omer, but Par HaEdim, Mechutz HaMachna. But then a few psukim later, by the Par HaHelam Dover Shal Tzibur, it also says that it has to be Mechutz HaMachna. She'en Tzorach Loimah. Now, it doesn't have to mention that point. Sharei Kranema Kasha Tzorach HaPorah Rishon. Because it already says in the pasuk there that you have to burn it like you burnt the first one, meaning the Par HaKoyim Mashiach. Therefore, listen like Machna Shnia. Therefore, that already teaches us that you need two Machnas. So now you need it outside the Azorah and outside the Harabayit, which is Machna Levida.
Because it said it previously,
that's the Mechutz HaMachna, and now repeat. Right. Next, how do we know the third one? True Omer Mechutz HaMachna B'deshen. Now, then when it comes to, in the next parasha, in parasha Tzav, when it says that you have to take the ashes from the Mizbeach, a Mechutz HaMachna, So it says Mechutz HaMachna, and again, She'en Tzorach Loima, and it doesn't have to say that the Deshin goes Mechutz HaMachna. It should have just said Mechutz HaMachna. Sharei Kvar Nemar HaShetach HaDeshin Yisoreis, because when going back now to the Tzar Koyin Mashiach, it says over there that it's to be burnt outside the Machna, in the place where the Deshin is poured out. So therefore, we automatically know that the Deshin is poured outside the Machna. Therefore, if it has to repeat the word Mechutz HaMachna by pouring out the Deshin, therefore, listen to the Machna Shlishis, that teaches us that it's a third one. So therefore, in other words, by putting these stukim together from the Par HaKoyin Mashiach and the Par HaHelam Dover Shel Tzibur and Trumas HaDeshin, not Trumas HaDeshin, the clearing off of the Deshin from the Mizbeach, that teaches us that the place of the Deshin is outside three Machnas, and once, therefore, since it says by the Par HaKoyin Mashiach that it has to be Al-Shetach HaDeshin, that means the same place, outside three Machnas. And since it says by the power of Helam Dover Shal Tzibur that is Kasha Sorach, that's a Torah Rishon, that it should be burnt like the first one was burnt, then that means also in the same place. So that's how we get that all of them are burnt in the same place. And then on top of that, Rashi points out back in the fourth parak of Amasechta a couple of months ago, we had a long involved sugya about how exactly we learn the relationship between the korbanos of Yom Kippur and the other korim and nisrafim and seirim and nisrafim. And we said there we had a word in the pasuk lapar va'asa lapar kasher asa lapar hachas kenya asa loy, that we learned over there the same rule applies to the power of Yom Kippur. So therefore, that also has to be burned out, so that'll be Machna. So now, okay, so all that's according to the Chachamim, and therefore that's how the Chachamim learn. So okay, so again, the Chachamim are learning two things over here. Number one, that it has to be burnt outside all three Machnas, and number two, that as soon as they leave one Machna, as soon as they leave the Azara, carrying it, they become Tumim. Reb Shimon Hai Mechutz HaMachna Mai Avodlei. You, what is Reb Shimon doing with this Mechutz HaMachna? Because he says that they only become tamei once most of the fire catches on to it. The answer is mibarlo lechidatani. He needs it to teach us what we learn in the following brayso. Rabbi Eliezer, nemar kan chutz hamachne. Here it says that the par and sur have to be burnt in the chutz hamachne. But nemar lahalam chutz hamachne. By the par adyoma, it also says that it has to be done in the chutz hamachne. Ma lahalam chutz hagimel machne. So therefore, he says I don't need this whole convoluted way of learning. That they have to take it outside all three machnas. We have by the par adyoma, it says chutz hamachna, and that means chutz v'gimel machnas, and it means outside the three machnas, because there the pasuk says v'hoisi yosel mechutz hamachna. The other way around. He still needs the limud that we said from v'hoisi yosel kolapar from the three times that it says mechutz hamachna. But he's saying that what I'm doing is like this. I'm using the chutz hamachna that says by the parim of Yom Kippur, which we already had three, but we already had three. One again, one by the power of Kohen Mashiach, one by the power of Helam Davar Shel Sivir, and one by clearing the ashes off the Mizeach to teach us that it's outside the three Machnas. And I don't hold, says Reb Shimon, that as soon as they walk out of the Azorah carrying it, they become Tomei. I'm using that Michutz L'Machna as one end of a Zeva Shava, which teaches us how we know where the Parah Adruma is checked. The Parah Adruma also says Michutz L'Machna. How do we know outside how many Machnas? We do that using the Zeva Shava from Yom Kippur. Mala Halam Chutzal Gimel Machnas, just like when it comes to Yom Kippur, it means outside all three Machnas, on the basis of the Limur that the Chachamim just told us. Afkan Chutzal Gimel Machnas, the same way, when it comes to the Parah Adruma, also has to be outside all three Machnas. And we learn backwards also. If for the ones of Yom Kippur, they have to be burnt outside all three machnas, then so it also applies to the Parah Adruma.
On the basis of
the Gzeira Shavah, the Chutz L'Machnas. And we learn backwards also. We learn from the Parah Adruma back to the Karbonis of Yom Kippur. Umala Halam, the Mizracha, Shal Yerushalayim, says Rav Shimon, just like the Parah Adruma was burnt. It was shechted and burnt east of Yerushalayim, and that we know because the pasuk says that you have to sprinkle the blood el noichach shnei oyel moed in the direction of the door of the oyel moed, which faces the Beit Mikdash faces east. There's an entrance of the Beit Mikdash that is faces east. So therefore, they have to be standing on the east on Harazotim. Afkam l'mizrach shel Yerushalayim. So Rav Shimon says you learn from that the place where the Purim and Seirim and Esrachim are burnt is to the east of Yerushalayim. Which means, by the way, okay, so that's what he said. That the Parah Adruma was done on Har HaZeitim, up to the east of Yerushalayim. Therefore, Rav Shimon says, from the comparison with between Parah Adruma, is east of Yerushalayim. Yeah, of course.
It's the north of the Kesel.
What are you talking about? No, it's not the north of the Kesel. It's not the north of the Kesel. What are you talking about? Look on the map. Look on the map. You have the Kesel. East of that, you have the whole Har HaBayis. East of that, you have the entire Har HaBayis. And east of that, you have Nachal Kidron. And east of that, you have Har HaZeitim. Nachal Kidron is east, and Har HaZeitim is on the other side of... I'm going to Apple Maps, actually, whatever, same difference.
Apple Maps.
Yeah, same difference. Yeah. Har HaZeitim is on the other side, yeah. No. Okay. Yeah, there's the old city, which includes the Harabias, and there's Har HaZeitim.
So where is the old city?
The old city is there. Or it says old city. Yeah.
That's a trick, old city. You can only see it when you shrink it down.
Oh, that, yeah. Put on satellite. The Apple Maps doesn't have satellite, new, whatever. Anyway, I can show you in more detail later, I guess. But that's how it is. You have, here.
Oh, wow.
No.
I thought somebody closed there.
Okay, there's the old city. They were zoomed in on the old city over there.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Road.
Yeah, they don't show any roads in it, which is a bother, but whatever. The coastal is about over here. The coastal and the Harabayas are about over here. Then you have Nachal Kidron, and then on the other side of it, you have Har HaZeitim. It is. How is it?
On Google.
Okay, I'll show you later, whatever. Anyway. That's how it is. So therefore, sort of Shimon is saying that the place where they burnt the five, where they put the deshen and where they burnt the five korbanos is to the east of Yerushalayim. So the question is, Elul Rabbanon Hechasarakuru. Okay, according to the Rabbanon, who don't accept that Zera Shabbat, because they're using the word Mechutz L'Machna to teach us when the people become Tomei. Hechasarakuru. So according to the Rabbanon, where do you burn them? The answer is to the Tanya, like we learn in a Braisa, Hechan Nistrofin, where do they burn them? It's fun, Yerushalayim, to the north of Yerushalayim, Chutz L'Shalosh Machnas, outside all three Machnas, meaning outside the city. To the north, it actually explains, because since the Chakas have to be shechted on the north side of the Azara, as we learned over here in the Masechta, therefore, symbolically, therefore, we have anything that's involved with the Chakas we're going to do on the north, and therefore we're going to burn them to the north of Yerushalayim. The captive of Aferach, in fact, points out the captive of Aferach was a Rishon who traveled in Eretz Yisrael about 700 years ago and wrote a whole sefer about the halachas and about the geography of Eretz Yisrael. And he mentions actually that in his times, and then for a couple hundred years after that as well, there were both. There were piles of ashes north of the old city, which have been identified and closer to our time did chemical analysis on them and found that they were ashes of animal bones. And there was another one east of Yerushalayim, not quite as far as Har HaZeitim, but someplace over there in Nachal Kidron, where also. So they, at some point, they may have followed Reb Shimon's opinion over here. Okay. Rav Yosi Agrili, or Beis HaDeshen Nisrofen, Rav Yosi Agrili says they're burnt in the Beis HaDeshen, which implies that there has to be Deshen there already. It has to be, it has to have been that Deshen had already previously been placed there.
Which is the
ashes from the Korban. You know, the point is, according to Rav Yosi Agrili, you can't just pick a place and say, okay, it's close to Shalosh Machnas, it's north, according to the Chachamim, or east, according to the Pshinim, that's good enough. No, it has to be a place where Deshen has previously been deposited. Omar Rav, a man Tana de Polygaloja Rav Yosi Agrili, so Rav says, which Tana argues with Rav Yosi Agrili on that? Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, that would be Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. The Tana, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, Al Shefa Chadashim Yisorif, means she has some deshen, meaning there has to be deshen there. If she yakta mushom deshen, and deshen should previously been placed there. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and she hemakom mishupa. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, that's not what it means. Al shefa chadeshen, the place where it's poured, implies that it has to be a slope. That has to be a slope area. So there, shefa means a place where it'll pour out. Yeah. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, on the face of it, is disagreeing with Rabbi Yosi Agrili. There doesn't necessarily have to be deshen over there. It doesn't even have to be that it was ever used for deshen before. But it has to be on a slope area. Amalei Abaye, Juma v'Vakayim v'Meshuvah. But Abaye says, not necessarily. Maybe Rabbi Yosi Agrili and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov both agree that it has to have been previously used for ashes. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov adds another detail. That place that's used for the ashes has to be a place that's on a slope. Rabbi Yosi Agrili disagrees with that and says it only has to have been used for ashes. But they may both agree on that concept. Hananamonon have third of Metamet Rodim. We learn in a Braisa, the people who are involved with burning the Korbanos, Metamet Rodim, they and their clothes become Tomei. Rashi explains this specifically according to the Shimon, that they only become Tomei once it's lit on fire. So therefore we have to deal with the people who are burning it. The loy hamasik is the ur metamet gadim, but the one who lights the fire is not metamet gadim. The loy masader samarocha metamet gadim. Also, the one who sets up the wood pile on which it's going to be burned is also not metamet gadim. Well, so according to Rashi, the Chachamim would disagree with this whole concept because they would say, since already the people who carried it out became tamei as soon as they left the azara, then everybody else who's involved afterward is also going to become tamei. So according to Rashi, yes. According to the Rambam and other Rishonim, not necessarily. It could be that this braisa is going according to the Chachamim as well. They would say the ones who are carrying it become tamei as soon as they walk out of the azara with it. But everybody else only becomes tamei when they're involved with the actual burning. The Ezerah Sodef, what's the definition of the ones who are burning? Hamasayeya Bishat Sreifa, that is the people who help with the burning, for example, turning over the pieces or making the fire burn better or whatever. Anybody who's helping with getting it burned. Yocho Af Mishinasu Eifa Metamot Gadim, you would think even after it became ashes, anybody who's involved with poking around on the ashes, let's say, would become something. No, Tamadlema Oysam, no, therefore the prophet says Bat Sodef Oysam, the one who burns them. Meaning Oysam, the town of Godim, only the people who are involved with Oysam, with them, with while they're burning, is the town of Godim, or Mishinasa Efer in the town of Godim, but not after they become ashes. Reb Shimon Omer, Oysam, the town of Godim, Reb Shimon says, you learn differently, Oysam are the town of Godim, but it means Nita Chabosa in the town of Godim. Once the flesh is completely burnt, then they're not in the town of Godim. That's my Benai, what's the difference? Either way, they seem to be saying once it's burnt, it became ashes, they're not in the town of Godim. I'm a Rav, it should be now the Shabbat Harucha. So Rav says the difference is, what if it was burnt but didn't quite become ashes yet? It became like a big piece of charcoal, a big lump of charcoal. According to the Tanakhama, it hasn't yet become ashes, therefore it's still oysam, it's still intact. Therefore people who are involved with trying to burn that are still in the time of God. Right, but according to Rav Shimon, or the laws of Rav Shimon, actually it says on the side, then if they're not in the time of God, because at that point it's already not oysam. Hadron Alok's voice.